Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Daebak Podcast, where we do a deep dive into the classic Korean dramas that have won over generations of fans across decades and around the world. Today, we're discussing the recently aired drama, The Atypical Family. I'm one of your hosts, Alisa, also known as the Bollywood Newbie on Twitter, and I'm joined by Melanie of Pardesi Reviews. Hi!
Hello!
And before we begin, I just want to let folks know we are going to have major spoilers in this episode, but we're going to start out with the non-spoiler sections because this is a pretty recent drama. So we will give you a heads up before we dive into the spoilers. Right.
The bottom line is you should see it immediately.
Yes. See, if you haven't seen it, run and see it. But we'll get into why in a minute.
Yeah, we should mention it's airing on Netflix. So it is easily accessible to everyone. I mean, just about everyone has a Netflix subscription. Yeah. You don't have to search it out on some weird, weird place. So
No. So let me do a quick introduction to the drama. The Atypical Family tells the story of the Boks, who are a family of superpowered beings who've lost their powers due to lifestyle diseases such as depression, alcoholism, insomnia, and bulimia. And this includes Bokui Ju, who used to have the power to travel to the past, but he now spends his time drinking and neglecting Ina, his teenage daughter. But then a mysterious woman named Do Da Hae enters their lives and things begin to change. And the show stars Jang Ki-young as Bokui Ju, the depressed time traveler. And this was his first role after serving in the military, and he hadn't acted in 3 years. When he took this part.
I didn't realize that until I watched the YouTube video that you recommended, where the composer of the music of the drama had the two main stars on, and he discussed the main lead actor discussed how, you know, it was like his like getting back in the groove of acting after 3 years away.
And it's really, I mean, his performance is incredible. And I really also want to give it to him for taking this role, because it is definitely not your typical heartthrob leading man role that you would see a K-drama star do. So kudos to him. And it also stars, the show also stars Chun Woo-hee as Do Da Hae, the mysterious woman who upends the lives of the Bok family. And she's a really interesting actress because she doesn't do many dramas. Yeah. She's done like three, I think. And one of them was The Eight Show. So she does shows and movies that are more extreme. And she also is not like a typical leading lady that you would normally see in a K-drama.
Yeah, she was a new face for me. The lead actor, Jung Kyung, I knew, I think, only from his supporting role in My Mister, which he was terrifying in that. And I literally did not recognize that it was the same person.
That's funny. No, I knew him because I had seen him in, obviously I seen him in My Mister, and then I also saw him in My Roommate is a Gumiho with Hyeri. And he's okay in it, but it's just like that's more of a like a rom-com-ish kind of role, and that's not really his strong spot, you know. It's much more like doing edgier stuff.
Yeah, this drama being more offbeat seem to gel well with him.
The show also stars Claudia Kim as Bok Dong-hee, the sister who lost her power to fly and suffers from bulimia. And fair warning that she spends two-thirds or three-quarters of the drama in a fat suit.
Yeah.
And when it started out, I was like, oh, God, you know, this is awful. But then actually, it really surprised me where they went with the character. And I actually loved the character, and it was wonderful. And she gave a great performance. Yeah. So like many things about the show are surprising. And that was a big one. And then finally, I want to shout out Park So-yi as Bokina, who was Guiju's teenage daughter. And she's amazing in this. Oh, my God. She's very, I think she's 12 or something, and she held her own.
Oh my God, incredible. I want to also shout out The mother of the supernatural family is played by K-drama veteran Ko Doo Shim, and she always gives a great performance. She's been in so many K-dramas, but this was really off the charts great for me. Her special superpower is that she can see the future in her dreams, but sometimes they're just fleeting glimpses of a scene, so she really doesn't know necessarily what the meaning is behind what she sees.
Right. And you know, yeah, there was a lot more. She usually plays the oma. She's usually the mm-hmm. mother. She has gray hair. And in this, she's a mother again, but like she's flamboyant and wearing leopard skin. And it's a really different role for her, which was fun to see.
Yeah.
So the Atypical Family spent most of its run in the Netflix top 10 non-English dramas. But I don't think it was very popular with the K-drama crowd, I guess you would say.
I mean, it was like, wasn't it about the same time as Lovely Runner? And it was just like all yeah. the oxygen in the room went to Lovely Runner, which was, I mean, also had time travel in it, but was maybe more typical, you know, love drama, rom-com kind of a situation. And this one was more offbeat. And, and especially showing the first episodes when our male lead is a depressed alcoholic, like you're not even really sure. Like, wait, what am I supposed to, like, is he supposed to be an attractive love interest or what is happening? Right. Like you kind of have yeah. to let the drama breathe a little bit before you get into it.
I mean, that's the thing. Cause like the drama all the characters are unlikable from the start, except maybe Ina. But even Ina is a very complex character. Like she's the most sympathetic person, but everybody else, yeah. when you first meet them, you're like, ooh. And I mean, I was never put off by it. I thought it was very interesting and I really enjoyed it, but a lot of people really, really hated it. And I mean, something that personally was really distressing to me. So, cause like the female lead in particular is really morally gray. And we're still in the non-spoiler section, so I'm not going to get into like what's going on with her. But like people online, I saw people call her a whore, a slut, a tramp. I mean, all kinds of, I was like, wow. I was so upset, honestly, by the feedback I saw. I mean, it's okay not to like the character because I think initially she's not very likable.
Yeah.
But when you start to go into those kind of gendered, sexually related insults, that gets funky. And I think a lot of the fans were just really put off by her because the way they met, the way the relationship progressed, it's not atypical. It's atypical, but right. it is, you know, the right. romance is not like what you normally see.
I mean, if it's in the first episode, is it being spoilery? Like, maybe what she does is what we're used to seeing a lovable rogue male character do.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, that we kind of forgive them because they're charming. And even if they did the exact same thing. So I don't think it's fair if a female character is doing some of those same things to immediately dismiss her and not say, I mean, for a male character, it would be like, oh, but he has a heart of gold. Okay. Like, why can't right. we make those assumptions about her? So, yeah, I mean, yeah. it's so different. And I just want to give a shout out while we're in the non-spoiler section before we get into all the amazing plot devices and a very different way to show time travel. I mean, we've seen time travel in many K-dramas, but this was really unique. The composer, I did not realize he has his own YouTube show, but Jung Jae-hyun, like I guess this, he normally does films. He doesn't normally do dramas and television dramas. And the music is exceptional and adds so much to really important moments or moments that you might not have realized have great significance, but the music is telling you, this is a moment, stop.
Like, yeah, pay attention.
Take notice of what is happening here. Just exceptional music. I had never heard the like, really. I mean, it just,
no,
as cinematic, I guess, is one way to put it. But I mean, he has a very unique style, and I really, really enjoyed the music.
He's got a really interesting background because he is a classically trained musician. He attended a music school in Paris that's like one of the best music schools in the world. And he does classical compositions, but he's also a former idol. And wow. Which is so funny. Yeah. He's a former idol, and he's best known for being like a variety show staple. Like, he appears on all of these Korean variety shows. So, and he's a raconteur. He's very funny. If you've ever seen him, he's very charming. And you know, I read an interview with him about the music, and he said that he wanted it to be as if Debussy were born in the 20th century and was composing electronic music. I mean, for a K-drama, right? I know. And it is so wild because I was watching this, and Mel, you know what I'm like, when I love something, I will rewatch episodes to catch stuff. And so I would watch it once on the TV to see it, the visual, because the visuals are stunning. The cinematography is incredible as well. But then I would rewatch with headphones on because there's all this ambient noise. It's not just that it's music. There's like these hums and buzzes and clicks and all kinds of stuff going on in the background to like add atmosphere to the scenes. It was so well done. And then the themes, like the theme for the couple.
Yeah.
And I forgot the name of the song. I should look it up. But anyway, it's a vocal by a female singer. And, you know, the normal K-drama syrupy thing. But this was very odd. It had little musical, like electronic beats to it. And it was not... you know, it was off kilter, and it's sort of like showing that this is a romance, but it's an unusual romance. It's not the usual romance you see in dramas. And it's a gorgeous theme. All the music was gorgeous.
Yeah. It's a really exceptional part. I mean, there's a lot of us who have suffered through dramas that have had either mediocre soundtracks or a soundtrack where there's one particular song that they paid for and they use it to death. Somewhere in the Rain, I'm looking at you.
Oh my God. And that same director did the same thing for his Hagwon series. And it's just,
you
like,
know,
oh,
I mean, you can like it at first, but then they use it to death because they don't have someone arranging the music for the scene. And watching the show, I guess, you know, this composer like hosts shows in his kitchen, makes food for people, and then they discuss the project that he's worked on. And so this, they were talking about particular favorite scenes, and he was talking about the thoughts behind wanting to show the significance of certain scenes where the couple first interacts or has a very, you know, climactic scene, you know, on the cliffs or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just fascinating, you know, hearing his thoughts and how much he went into, you know, and he was saying even the very first episode of the drama had what he said was 50 different music cues.
Yeah.
He's like, it was like a film. And that's very much like how the drama feels when you're watching it. It feels more like an extended film. I don't even know exactly if I'm explaining it right, but you know what I mean. It just has a different feel to it. Like, there's no, I mean, you and I both love a good, just, okay, let's just, you know, wallow in the fluff or whatever kind of a My Sweet Mobster. I'm looking at you like I enjoy like just wallowing in the cuteness and the sweetness and whatever. But this is the way this drama is written and the way it's directed, there is no fluff. There is no extra. Like, you have to pay attention because,
yes,
especially because of the time slips and the time travel, you have to really pay attention to certain scenes and how characters are changing and whatever. And there's no fat in this.
And
there's
Yeah, the writing is superlative because it's only 12 episodes and it is tight. Yeah. Like you said, there's no fluff and every scene is meaningful. And yes, you have to pay attention. And the interesting thing is, like, the ending of the drama is telegraphed through the whole drama. But you don't necessarily know that when you first start watching. You don't understand necessarily what you're looking at yet. you know, but when it all comes together in the end, and then you realize how every single piece of, you know, all came together. Oh my God. It was amazing. Right. It was amazing. And like, it was just so thoughtful, you know, and it had really important things to say, I think, just about the human condition. What is it like to, you know, wrestle with feelings of futility, feelings of not being able to change things, of having to live with grief, of, you know, how do you move on after a giant loss? Like all of these, you know, this existential, I would call it a really philosophical drama. And I loved it. I mean, dare I say it was art? It was art, right?
I mean, and I agree with you. I mean, I'm not going to say that there was not. There was, there's comedy moments. There's satire. There's, you know, there's everything. It's not all darkness. I mean, there's romantic scenes. It's just, but the thing is, this is the kind of drama, like you said, it was 12 episodes. It was not 16. It was not 20. It was 12. And this was the kind of drama where someone had a vision. Here's where we start. Here is where we finish. And not just, oh my God, we have to do an entire episode of product placement because we got to fill a whole episode of nothing because we've got to fill it out to 16. No. I mean, there's so many dramas that are like that. And, you know, I always say it's like ice skating. Like, do they, we're in the middle of the Olympics right now where we're recording. Did they stick the landing? This one stuck the landing.
Oh my God.
In an amazing way.
It's
so much. Simone Biles sticking the landing level.
Oh, okay? No. Incredible. And the thing is, like, you know, like we can count on one hand how many dramas that we can say that about. My Mister.
Yeah.
Right. What else? Like very few. You can just say, yeah, like it was from beginning to end, clear vision. They knew exactly what they were doing and everything they set out to accomplish happened. And you know that because the vision is so clear. And I want to shout out the director and I want to give his name. Hold on. His name is Jo Hyung-taek. And he directed Sky Castle, which is hilarious to me because you could not get like more opposite land because Sky Castle is total makjang. Soapy, over the top, glossy, you know. I admire that because he obviously did his time, right, doing like the journeyman work of being a director and making, you know, his living and also learning. And then so then when he was ready to do his passion project, he was ready. Like his passion project came out, you know, so incredibly gorgeously, perfectly. It's not perfect, but it's close. It's close to perfect. This is amazing. And I get so like, I try not to get too upset if other people don't like what I like because everybody has different opinions about things. But I feel like this drama is so misunderstood. Like the things I see people talking about online and the things they say about it that are just so missing the mark of what this drama is about. It's like people have a certain lens they put on to watch and then they just miss it if something is different. And this one is different always, you know, plotting wise, the way the romantic beats play out, the character arcs is so not what you're expecting.
Right. And you know, one of the things that might be off-putting if you just tried one episode of this drama, as you mentioned, the character of Bok Dong-hee, played by Claudia Kim, is wearing a fat suit. And she's a very tall actress. And you see her binge eating and hiding it in secret and whatever, and you're just like, oh, she's going to be thin by the end of this drama. This is going to be a horrible message, whatever. Okay. And I'm just going to give a slight spoiler to just put that worry to rest. And that there's a scene where her brother is like, you know, remembers a scene from childhood when they were eating together. And he's like, you know, you were just so happy when you were eating. You know, you were just so beautiful and happy. And so just turns all of that on its head. And the person that she's trying to lose the weight for is shown to be completely unworthy of that. And I mean, we're shown that in spectacular fashion. So, and then you see she's doing it for herself, right? And then at a certain point, she's doing it for herself and she heals herself. But, because obviously binging is not healthy. I don't care what your weight is, but the binging behavior is not healthy either. But I just felt like it was so That was one of my biggest fears in watching that first episode is, oh my God, they've got this woman in a fat suit. This is going to be horrible. And it wasn't. And I just never could have imagined how beautifully they dealt with those issues in later episodes.
I agree. That completely took me by surprise. I had the same thing. I was like, this is going to be awful. But no, they handled it beautifully. And again, it's just like there's so many moments where you think the drama is going to zig and it zags. I mean, literally every episode ends with some kind of a cliffhanger or some kind of moment where you're gasping out loud. And we were live watching it, so we couldn't just be like hit play on the next episode. And it was like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Right? You know, it was just so crazy. And I actually went through all the episodes and looked at the ending to see how it ended. And I was like, wow, yeah, like really planned it out so that each episode propelled you into the next episode. You know, it was never a letdown at the end. You were always like, what's going to happen next?
There was so much darkness in the first couple of episodes. I am not going to compare because the themes are not the same, but in the similar way that Elisa told me when I was watching My Mister, stick with it. You know, that you are rewarded because there's so much darkness in the first about three episodes of My Mister. I was like, am I going to have to slip my wrist before I keep watching this? Like, oh my God. And there's a lot of darkness in the first couple of episodes of The Atypical Family. I'm not going to lie. But the way they are dealt with and the way everything is resolved by the end, the payoff is unbelievably great.
Really, I mean, great. I don't know about you, but I was sobbing at the end. I literally cried through the last half hour so hard that, I mean, I had like a pillow over my face because I was crying
so
hard.
I don't know why I couldn't see the solution, but when they finally, I was just like, how are they going to make this a happy ending? How is this going to happen? And then the way that it happens is so completely perfect. I'm like,
oh, I know. Genius. Oh my God. It was so mind blowing. It was so great. It was just, but even aside from that, just the whole way, well, I guess, do you want to get, like, we could get into spoilers now, I guess. Spoilers. Yeah. We're going to get into spoilers.
Okay. If you haven't been convinced already, you need to watch this drama. Again, it's only 12 episodes.
Yeah.
And it's really, really great. So, okay. Now we're talking spoilers.
So the big dilemma of the story is Guiju, who's the male lead, he had went through a horrible tragedy where his daughter was born. And then the same day his daughter's born, there's a giant fire and his Hyung at the fire, he's a firefighter and his Hyung is killed. And then Guiju keeps going back to that moment, to the past, to try to save his Hyung, and he can't save him and he can't save him. And finally he just stops being able to travel to the past and he's depressed and he has PTSD. And by the way, it was the most amazing depiction of a PTSD I've ever seen. It's quite literal. He could not stop going back to that trauma. Right. And
he couldn't experience the joy because that's the day that his daughter is born. And he's so overjoyed. But then all of that is eclipsed by the sadness of the event that happens.
Right. And then his wife
and him witnessing it. Yeah.
Shortly, like I guess a few years later, because, you know, she's really unhappy with him, about to leave him because of he's abandoned the family because of what's going on. And then she has an accident, dies. And then, so that's like the central thing of the story. And you revisit that moment over and over and over again throughout the drama from different angles. And then of course, Dahe shows up, and Dahe, it turns out, was also present in that moment because she was in the school where the Hyung dies in this fire and she's trapped in the school. Under horrible circumstances, right? And so Dahe is a scammer, and she enters Guiju's life and the family's life because she's intending to marry him and then steal all his money, have him declared incompetent and steal his money.
And what she has learned is that his mother has insomnia. And she gets a job like at a spa or something where she gives this magic tea to the mother and then so she can finally sleep. And again, this is tied into you know, modern ailments, whatever, like she cannot sleep, therefore she can't predict the future, therefore the family's finances and everything are crumbling because it was through her predicting the future that they've been able to be wealthy and whatever. So, and you know, she just, so, I mean, it turns out, you know, it's just like sleeping pills or something in the tea, but, but that's how she gets entry to the family is through the
mother, because the mother dreams about Dahe, and she dreams that Dahe is going to marry Guiju. And so
I think she sees like a family ring on her hand or whatever.
And And so, and it's so Guiju is like, what the hell? I don't want to marry you, right? But then he travels to the past and realizes that the only person he can touch and who can see him in the past is her, because before, when he traveled to the past, you know, nobody could see him and he couldn't touch anything or change anything at all. But now suddenly there's Dahe, and he can touch her and, you know, they can interact, and he's just mind blown. He doesn't know what he's doing. And so the whole, somebody said on Twitter, and this was insightful, that the whole thing is plotted like a mystery novel, you know, like you're kind of getting fed dribs and drabs of information, and we don't know right away what their connection is. We don't know right away that she was in the school during the fire. Right. You kind of learn that as you go along.
Learn it. Yeah.
But it's just really interesting how the drama, like, how do I express this? There's funny stuff around this. Like, remember the scene where when he shows up and she falls into his arms and then looks in the mirror and he doesn't have a reflection because it's his past self traveling, and she screams and freaks out. I mean, that's very funny. There's like little humor, stuff like that throughout the drama. So no, it's not all heavy and dark. There's a lot of moments where you're laughing out loud. It's, you know, I think they do a really good job of balancing the tragic stuff with the things that are very, and Donghee is a very funny character.
Yeah.
You know, she's very entertaining. But yeah, like just how little by little, and so like they're flirting with each other, and you know, Dahe is being very predatory towards Guiju at first. And a lot of people they just can't handle it. They can't handle. And the other thing they can't handle is that she's done this twice before. So she had two husbands that she divorced and she had sex with them. Oh, forget it. People freak out and like, how dare you? And you're a horrible person. And, you know, it's interesting because they gave her a backstory where she was blackmailed into becoming a scammer. And I was like, I don't need that. Personally, for me to sympathize with her.
Okay, but I actually loved what they did with that.
Yes, because, I agree. Yeah,
because at first I'm like, okay, you know, like you, like okay, yeah, think, okay, I guess we had to have this backstory to redeem her in our eyes and make her okay and realize, she doesn't really want to hurt him. Blah blah blah. But then, like, they add this extra layer of she was taken in when she had no one by this family. Does view them as her family,
right?
And there's been this financial thing overhanging the whole thing, and yet they really, you know, it's like they finally have to admit by the end of the drama, yes, we're really family, you know,
right?
Yes,
you're
really my daughter, not because you feel, you know, you have this debt that I paid the insurance money or whatever it was, you know, when her father dies, so, and she was an orphan, so. I just love that, you know, the what they did with it, because it just wasn't so often. It's a con man who then changes their mind, but we don't have a background of a family. We don't have that. And, you know, it's like the uncle seems like he's this sinister stalker kind of person, scoping out information about everybody. And then he turns out to be the biggest teddy bear in the world. Right. And in the final scenes of the drama with him, like,
I know. And when he was blowing the bubbles for them to cheer them up, you're such a, and that's the thing, like, a character that you expected to be one way and then they flipped it to be another way. And I think, and I thought the parallels between the families, which were very explicit, because you have the two mothers who are both woo, a lot, right? The mothers are really difficult, have really damaged their children, whether their children are biological or adopted, but they've really done a number on them. And they're kind of very harsh people and kind of dangerous people, because at different points of the story, they do things that are kind of sinister, both of them. So I really, I thought it was so interesting. And then you have Grace and Donghee, who sort of form, well, basically it was a Gia, a girl love story that didn't get really played out to be a girl.
I know, I was expecting it to go a different way.
I knew it wouldn't, because it's a K-drama, but the way they played it was so
coded.
We all know. Donghee saves Grace from a man threatening her, grabs his arm and twists it. I mean, how many times have we seen a scene like that, right? And when they fly, so Donghee's thing is like she can't fly anymore, but she used to be able to fly. And it's not because she thinks it's because of her weight, but it turns out, which I absolutely loved, it's because of her self-esteem. And that once she started to feel better about herself, then she could fly again. But then we're all waiting for the moment she flies, because we know it's going to be a big deal. And I had tweeted, it better look like this. And I did a clip from Superman, and it did. It looked exactly like that. I was so like, I predicted it. And she's flying through the air with Grace in her arms, doing the princess carry. Every signal that you could have for these two to be a couple was being thrown out there until the very last episode. And I mean, I knew it was going to go that way, but it's just funny to me. Like, they were definitely doing a lot of wink nudge with those characters.
That's an example of some dramas are all about the lead couples, and there's the supporting characters are just kind of there to be there and don't have any depth or their own storylines to them. And this is a drama where each and every supporting character is interesting in their own way and has their own backstory, and you're just as invested. And like you say, like, what, just as invested as we are in the main characters, are they going to get together? Are they going to be happy? We want Donghee to be happy. We want her to get happiness. We want her to see her story come to a good end as well. So I love that.
And there was a lot of depth.
We just talked about the actress, but the character of this daughter who is painfully shy, won't look anyone in the eyes, literally, because she's been hiding from the family that her secret power is that she can read minds if she's looking in someone's eyes. And she unfortunately read her mother's eyes just before this accident about why her mother wanted to leave her father. And so she like never wants to know the truth of what people are really thinking ever again. And so she has her own journey. She's being bullied at school again. Like, if she happens to look in her bully's eyes, like, she knows exactly what they're thinking, how they're going to manipulate her. And yet she's so starved for friendship that she just goes along with horrible situations. So,
and she's horribly neglected by her family, because, like, Guiju loves her, but he's an alcoholic and he's got PTSD, and he wants to be a good father, but he can't, you know, pull himself together to be a good father. And then the grandmother is horrible, because the grandmother thinks, because she doesn't know that Ina has powers, she thinks that Ina's an illegitimate child, so she treats her like one, like she doesn't regard her, and she says terrible, hurtful things in front of her, you know. And it's so awful. And I think that people who watched it often, Ina's the character that a lot of people, the only character a lot of people could sympathize with. But the drama isn't going to just give you a simple victim, because one thing about Ina is that Dahe is trying to talk to Ina about being bullied, right? And then she's like, I'm going to talk to your family about it. And then Ina looks her in the eye and says, I know that you're a con woman, and I'm going to tell them about you if you don't keep your trap shut and don't tell them about me getting bullied. And I went, wow. You know, because your instinct is to just, it was, oh my God, it was amazing. And the thing is, though, like, I thought, how smart is this show? Because instead of just giving us the stereotypical bullied teenager, she is a superpowered being from a wealthy and powerful family. So you cannot just look at her as a simple victim. Like, she's very empowered in many ways, despite the fact that she is neglected. Like, she's the one who sends Guiju to find Dahe when Dahe runs away, and she reads the uncle's mind so that she can tell Guiju where she is. And, you know, she has a lot of agency that she exercises in her life, despite the neglect and despite the fact that she's, you know, suffered a lot. She's such a fantastic character.
She is. She's one of the best kind of, I guess she's supposed to be high school age or middle school age, but I mean, one of the most heartbreaking scenes is to show how the father just is not even really seeing her, is that it's her birthday and he gives her this stuffed rabbit. And she has a whole drawer full of them. Like, he doesn't see that she's not 4 years old anymore. Like, he is stuck at that moment of the car accident. She was in the car, you know, when the car accident happened. And I think she had a stuffed rabbit in the car. So she doesn't want to have a stuffed rabbit that reminds her of that moment when her mother was killed. And yet he keeps giving her a stuffed rabbit again and again and again every year. And finally, instead of stuffing it in a drawer, she throws them all out in the trash. And he sees that. And it's Dahe who is like, how about we get her like a pair of nice fun shoes or like something that a teen girl would actually want, because she's not as chubby, you know, a 4-year-old child.
And that's what was
Dahe heals their relationship.
And that's the thing about Dahe, is because, like, even though she's a scammer, she's emotionally intelligent. And she actually has empathy for Ina. Like, she identifies with Ina because she was bullied, we learn, in high school. And so it's this interesting thing, because she's there to take advantage of the family, but then she's also, like, the healthiest person emotionally, you know, because they're such a wreck. Yeah, everybody in the family's a wreck, you know.
Because she has been a scammer and she has honed her emotional intelligence to really read people in order to manipulate them. She can read the situation in every circumstance between the interactions between the people in this family that all of them are blind to. You know, they're just stuck in these patterns, and they're not seeing how, they're not even seeing that there's a problem, much less how to break out of the pattern.
And like, what I like about her journey is that, you know, she eventually realizes that she cares for Guiju and doesn't want to manipulate him anymore. And they're about to get married. Like, she's about to grab the prize, you know, and she stops the wedding and says, I don't want to do this. I've been scamming you. I'm leaving. And she busts up the wedding. And the thing is, though, like, after that, she's not really contrite. I don't know how to express this. Like, she isn't falling over herself to apologize for what she did. And in fact, her scammer stuff doesn't really go away. It's kind of funny because, like, she, you know, tries to move on and scam someone new, and Guiju's following her around. And then remember the scene where she's like got a new victim, and Guiju starts to see all the things that she had done to him. And Guiju likes it, though. Like, he respects her. Like, he doesn't, like, he's not judgmental. He's kind of like, oh, you did that to me. Wow. Okay. You know, but like more in a golf clap kind of way than like, oh, how could you do that to me? You know what I mean? And I really liked that, because I felt like the show respected her for being smart, for being resilient, for, you know, thinking on her feet quickly. She never got gushy soft. Like, she definitely softens when the romance really kicks in, but like, she's never, like, her biggest act of love, Guiju, is staging the car accident. You know what I mean? Like, she never really, like, she's still herself. And
she fakes her own death in a spectacular fashion.
Yeah.
So that, because he won't leave her alone. She, you know, she walked away from the wedding, and yet he won't leave her alone. He won't. He's just like, no, this isn't going to happen. And so she has to, feels like she has to go to this extreme to fake her own death, so that he will stop.
And at that point, she knows that he, or his mother, or she thinks she knows, because his mother dreams that he dies. Yeah. And so she thinks he's going to die if they're together. So she wants him to get away. And, you know, I just, there was just like these, I just loved how they handled her character trajectory. The thing is
you imagine if it was a film and you only had 2 hours, it would have just been one scene of tears and they're reunited. No, because this was 12 episodes, they were able to let that breathe and let you know, her make a self-sacrificing gestures. And yet, you know, like we had a little drama with that of them finally getting together and him just being steadfast. We just saw all the ways that he was just like, nope, I'm going to be steadfast. I'm going to help your family. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, I'm going to do all of these things and show his love and not just say it, but show it and show that he could be a constant person.
Another funny thing that I loved is like that usually have the mother-in-law paying off the woman to go away, and she paid the mom to go away and leave her alone. And I just thought that was hilarious. It's like, again, this drama just keeps flipping things over. And there's also these beautiful little poignant moments that I thought were very, for me, very touching, that I think people felt like maybe we're too understated, but it was stuff like Guija goes back to the past and ties her shoelace, you know, or like when he gets the iced treat for her that she's only ever had once in her life. And he went back to the place where she got it and brought it back for her, you know, and it's just these little poignant moments.
Beautiful. I loved all of those.
Oh yeah. It was just so good. And I want to talk about the time travel, because the time travel is very different than
it's very different than normal time travel kind of drama.
Like we can compare it to Lovely Runner.
There was like a device in Lovely Runner where you had to have this special watch, and if you weren't wearing it, then it didn't work. And, you know, there was only so many times that you could do it, whatever. Like, this was just very, very different.
Well, the other thing about Lovely, it's Lovely Runner, Twinkling Watermelon, Be My Favor, which we did a podcast on, all they could change the past. The time travel meant they could go back and change the past to change the future. This show has a closed time loop. And what that means, basically, imagine time is like a two-dimensional stretching out into infinity in two directions. And every single thing that's ever going to happen has happened or is happening along the timeline. So there's no way to change it. And, Guija goes back to the past, he can travel to the past, but he can't actually, everything that he does in the past was fated to happen. And it's not unheard of, because like, if you've ever seen the film 12 Monkeys, they have a closed loop in 12 Monkeys. So it's not like it's not been done before, but it is unusual, because usually the fantasy in a time travel is that you can change the future. You know what I mean? You get a second chance. But in this drama, you think that's what, when it starts out, you don't know right away that it's a closed time loop. You don't really figure that out until almost the very end of the story. And the fantasy ends up being, I don't know if it's a fantasy, but it's more about, I can't change it, but I can change how I react to it. I can become a more loving person. I can, you know, bring my loved ones closer to me. I can be more generous. I can be more optimistic. You know, like I can't change the facts, but I can change how I react to it.
Yeah. And I mean, for instance, they show how he discovers as a child that he has this power, that he wants to go back, you know, to a happy moment. And then he sees a dog be run over, and he keeps trying to go back to save the dog. And he tries all these different things, but nothing he does affects what happens. And so, you know, that's like his dilemma for most of his life is, and that's, it's shown as the, you know, when he goes back, it's like black and white. Like, he can't interact with anything. He's just, no one can see him. He's just there. And it's only her that he can touch, that he can hold her hand, that he can, she's in color, you know, where everything else around is black and white, she's in color. So their interactions when he goes back in the past is something different than he's ever experienced in his entire life of using this power. When they are, you know, when they're together in the past, you know, it's something new and extraordinary. So, but yeah,
and the big mystery.
But And we have the contrast of the mother who can see the future. And so we feel like certain, you know, horrible things are fated, you know, and can't be escaped. So
right.
We have this time.
Right. And the thing is, like, at first, when you're going through the story, the mystery is like, we find out first, we see Guiju going back to the fire and over again and being traumatized by his Hyung dying. And then we find out that Dahae was at the fire and somebody rescued her, but we don't know right away who rescued her. Right. And at first we think, well, maybe it was the Hyung, maybe it was, you know, we don't really know. And then we find out, oh no, it was Guiju. Guiju saved her, right? Which means Guiju had to time travel back. But then you don't know if Guiju survives the fire or not, right? And so it was just so interesting because Guiju and Dahae and other people in the family are all trying to struggle against this possibility that Guiju is going to die. And then finally, at the end, Guiju kind of makes his peace with it and just says, no matter what happens, I save Dahae. And I know that that's my fate. And I don't know what's going to happen to me after I do it, but I'm not going to struggle against it anymore. I'm not going to try to change things. You know, I'm not going to try to change fate. I'm just going to embrace what I need to do. I just loved it. And another person who had a similar trajectory was his sister, because remember when they, the last episode was freaking amazing, right? Oh my God. So like, cause you're like, okay, you were like spoiled in a way for the ending all along, pretty much, like not the entire thing, but a good chunk of it. Like you knew he was going to go to the fire. We all knew he was going back to fire and save Dahae, right? We didn't know how it necessarily would play out. So, and it could have fallen flat. It could have been totally anticlimactic at the end, right? Because we knew it was coming, but it wasn't. It was just amazing because the way it unfolded didn't go the way we expected. And one of the things that happened was Donghee's mother dreamed that she was going to fly in front of people. And so she didn't want her. They all attended a performance that Ina was doing at her school. And she told Donghee, stay home, because if you come, you're going to fly. And at first Donghee's saying, the hell with that. I'm going to the thing and I'm not going to fly. I'm not going to do it. Right. But then a fire breaks out in the auditorium and there's a fire curtain on the stage that gets stuck. And if it doesn't come loose, a lot of people are going to die. And she stands up and she says, I choose to do this. And then she flies. And it was so brilliant because she couldn't change her fate, but because she chose it, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, I can't make it not happen, but I can choose it willingly. I can embrace it. And in a way it's very Buddhist. The idea, you know, there's this idea of detachment in Buddhism. And I think a lot of that is very much underlying the story of this drama. You know, you can't.
Well,
you can't,
I mean, it was part of her whole storyline also of here. She had been passive. She had been chasing after this guy, wanting to get married. And then again, it was like this self-esteem moment of, no, I'm not going to hide. I'm not going to hide my special power. I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to use it for good to save these people. And I'm not going to hide who I truly am anymore.
Right.
It was that kind of a moment as well.
Exactly. Like, right. Oh, yeah, exactly. No, and that's correct. And it was just so amazing. And then you start to realize that the mother's dreams are very limited, because she says she saw people flying through the air and her dream, and everybody thought, well, it's people falling out of a burning building, but it turned out to be of the performance. Like, people were twirling and there was a clock, but it wasn't the clock on the school building, it was a prop in the play, you know, performance.
Right.
And so Guiju has this moment where he realizes this is it. This is the moment this is when I go to save Dahae. And I mean, I think that's when I started crying, because it was sort of like, this is it. Like, you know, after you get built up for this moment through the whole drama, and he travels to the past, and there's all these just poignant moments where he says to Ina's mother, thank you for giving Ina to us. Thank you for giving birth to her. And then he goes to his Hyung and he says goodbye to his Hyung. And shout out to Jang Ki-young, because the look on his face when he looked at the Hyung, I literally was sobbing.
My God.
And it was his choice. You know that. I don't know if, well, I don't know if you remember it from the interview he did. But he said that he did a few takes with the director where they played it bigger. And then he said to the director, I think this needs to be more low key.
Mm-hmm.
And the director said, okay. That. Yeah. The director said, okay, try it your way. And that's the take that made it in. And he was
I was so impressed with Jang Ki-young's acting in this drama.
So good.
So impressed, because a lot of it, like you say, is not words that he said or histrionics or big, you know, big moments or whatever like that, you know, but taking small, quiet moments and making them extremely meaningful and having these looks that he would give people that just carried so much emotion behind his eyes. It was that kind of a performance. It was in a lot of ways a quiet performance that just, instead of, you know, like a big screaming kind of a thing, like you say, it was just. And that's another way that this drama feels different. Like a lot of dramas are mukbang and way over the top. And then there's just certain incredible scenes in this drama that are just quiet and beautiful instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I want to mention for that scene, because it was such a good scene, but the music that played in that scene, Jang Jae-hyung said it wanted a song for it. The director didn't want the song, and he said, I will leave the project if you don't let me use the song for the scene. And so they let him use it. He was right. And you gotta respect the director too, because the director assembled a team of people that he trusted, and it was collaborative. And he was like, yeah. Okay, yes, try your take. Okay, yes, we'll go with your music choice, you know. And you know, it takes a strong director to be able to do that kind of thing. The whole ending sequence was so unbelievably cathartic. It just brought everything together exactly. Everybody got like the ending you wanted. And then after he saves Dahae, and do you want to like say what the plot twist was? It was so crazy.
So then he dies, right? Like he doesn't die. I understand that.
But yes.
I'm saying we think that he dies.
He think he dies, yes.
We think that the mother's future prediction came true. Dahae is still very much a part of the family. And then we realize one reason why is because she has an adorable little son, Guiju's son. And
5 years pass.
Yeah, 5 years has passed. Like they do this, you know. And she's playing with the little boy, and she's like, oh, you lost your ball. Where did you find it? And he said, I found it in yesterday. And then you realize he has a special power, just like everyone else in the family. And his is to be able to go back to the past and bring something back. Gee.
right.
What do we think he might bring back from the past?
This is an important line that I want to point out because it's for a reason. But like first, Dahae says, I lost something 5 years ago. Wait, maybe it was 18 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then Nudie, you know, she turns around and then she hears something and she turns around and Nudie is the kid standing with Guiju. And Guiju's covered in soot because he yanked him out of the burning building, you know, before the explosion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then boom, the end. And it was like,
right. and then the music.
And then the music. Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, what? No, it was so good.
Epic.
But so
such
many
an epic ending.
I have to explain this because so many people didn't understand the ending. And I actually created graphics explaining it, and I tweeted it, and it got like 1,000 likes. It's still getting likes, which is hilarious to me because people are still like discovering it. But anyway, the point is that Guiju didn't die and he wasn't trapped in the past. So basically it's that he went and saved Dahae, and then for him it was 1 second he was in the fire and the next second he was with the family again 5 years later.
Right.
Like for him, basically almost no time passed. It's for everybody else time passed.
Right.
But not
There was no, body. There was nothing because there was this explosion.
Right.
So it's just, they all assumed he had died in this explosion and this fire, but he had actually been yanked out of that situation by his own son.
And people say, well, why didn't he teleport back to where he left? And it's because if he had gone back to where he left, he would have died because he would have teleported directly into the middle of the fire at Ina's school. Right. The other school. So he couldn't do that. So, and, you know, when you think about it, like he was saying, and I mean, in that moment, he was saying goodbye to Dahe as he pushes her out the window to fall onto the, you know, whatever you call it, the thing that people fall on when they fall out of, of burning buildings. But and we think that he really is saying goodbye to her. Like, we don't know. We didn't know until the last freaking minute whether he survives or not. They managed to keep that going until the last minute.
I mean, they totally got me. And I just, it was so completely perfect. I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing where you're like, but of course that's how they worked it, right? Because they have created this world and these rules, and it completely fits within the rules of the drama that they have created. You know, there's a lot of things like with Lovely Runner, you're like, yeah, that didn't quite work in, but we'll just go with, you know, there was none of that.
Yeah, yeah, humana.
Right? Romance reasons, okay.
Right.
This, none of that here. No. Everything perfectly fit within the logic and the rules that they had created for the world that they built and the rules of the time travel. And it all seamlessly fit and was perfect. And like you say, you just felt this cathartic, oh, this is perfect kind of, you know, release, you know, in that last episode.
I've seen so many people, though, say it had plot holes at the end. I'm like, there were no plot holes. There wasn't a single plot hole. It was all wrapped up together. Go rewatch it. Go pay attention.
Right. I mean, but this is part of why we're saying, like, you have to pay attention, but also the joy that I felt, you know, the fact, you know, the later that she's, you know, for instance, the sister, Dong-hee, is still friends with Dahe's sister, she's flying the uncle around, you know, like she's the powerful one, even though he looks like this big burly guy. Obviously they have this happy relationship together, and she is the bigger personality, and she's carrying him around as she flies him around like he's on a roller coaster ride or something, and he's just like, oh.
right.
I mean, I just, you know, so they gave us these happy endings for everyone. You know, Ina, you know, you can see is a, even though she's dealt with all this tragedy, she's a confident young woman. Like, it's just.
People were disappointed that we didn't get to see more of Ina, but they really couldn't avoid it because the actress, it was very interesting what they did with the actress. They cast her 3 years younger than the people who played her classmates. And she was tiny, and it was on purpose, you know, to make her look more vulnerable compared to everybody else. But what it meant was there was no way to age her to 18 years old, you know, and it would never have been convincing to do that. So they had to kind of just give you a quick glimpse of like her back or something in the hallway of her school, and you see her name badge, and I think that's all you see. That was a little bit like the people were disappointed by it, but at the same time it's like, well, I mean, you know,
practically you do what, like you said, with this actress, I mean, because she was just such an exceptional child
God,
she was, I mean, let's just sing her praises again. She was so amazing. She's up against some of the top talents in K-dramas, and she went toe-to-toe with everybody. And was so amazing. And her whole arc and the redemption of the repair of her relationship with her father. I mean, normally when you're watching these dramas, you're all about the romantic couple. And here, the pair that I wanted to see come back together was really this father and daughter. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see them heal together. And we saw it in such spectacular ways. Oh, so well, glorious.
The scene where she reads his mind for the first time. And he's crying and looking at her and thinking, I'm so sorry I let you down. I love you. You know, I'm going to. Yeah. And then she's, oh, I know. And they're both crying. And the look on her face, because it's a tight close up of both their faces in that scene. They have to carry it solely with their expressions. Yeah. Oh, my God. It was good. It was so good. Right. The whole thing is good. We're not even touching. And the thing is, only 12 episodes. We're not even touching. I mean, there's so much we haven't even like touched on. And I'm not, I mean, we're not going to dive into every detail, but like, there's so many amazing scenes. There's so many little moments. You know, we haven't even talked about the father, that whole thing with him. He was an interesting character. I mean, there's just so many, so much going on.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, it was just family with this very strong, domineering mother. And then you have the father. And it's like they're showing how he was viewed as less than in the family because he didn't have a supernatural power, right? He
right,
was like,
right.
You know, what was it?
But
like
you brought up the kinkeeper once, the idea of a kinkeeper. Yeah. He was the kinkeeper because he was the one who kept the family lore. Like they have, and I love this is a tiny little scene, but it's example of how good it is. Like the animations showing the ancestors, remember, like he opens a book and talks to Guiju about, and you have these little animations of Joseon era ancestors with powers and how all that, and it's telling you exactly how the rest of the story is going to go, only you don't know it when you're watching it, but you know, right. A little preview and, I mean, of
he,
it.
And literally he's like kind of a house husband. Like his role is to sit there,
he cooks,
with a notebook, when his wife would wake up from a nap to be able to immediately capture whatever she might have dreamed that could be from the future. Just like you say, he cooks and he's the one that cares for the family. And it's such a different upside down kind of relationship than what we normally see, be it a Western drama or a, K-drama.
All the women were so powerful, all of them, every woman in the story. Which is such a pleasure.
And I loved how, everybody is damaged. Everyone has some trauma that they're working through. And Dahe, I thought, how they slowly, like you said, the beginning, we're seeing her that she's this con artist, okay? But then we're seeing she has this weird thing where she can't even turn on a stove. Like she has like a long-handled thing and she's trying to she can't even make herself food.
Right.
Because she's so afraid to turn on a stove. And so, the mystery thing that you're saying, we're like, okay, what happened to her? Like, we've been talking about how she was trapped in this fire, but we slowly learn that because we're seeing her fear of fire. The first time that Guiju goes back in time and can touch her is when there's a supposed fire at a mall. And she's so terrified that she can't even run. She just collapses on the floor in like a fetal position. And she can't even save herself because she's so terrified of the fire alarms going off. And he's the one that like can touch her when he goes back in time. Yeah. And that pivotal moment when she needs someone to hold her hand. Oh my gosh.
Like, no, I know.
And it's the dad also that notices that about her because she's trying to be like, okay, I'm going to worm my way into this family. I'm going to help them cook dinner and I'm going to worm my way in with this dad. But yet he can notices right away that, okay, I've asked her to turn on the stove and heat up the soup or whatever. And she can't make herself do it. Or she's trying to use the long tongs or whatever.
Right.
And other little details, and I love this when costuming shows changes in character. So Guiju starts the drama. He's always wearing like black. Literally, he's wearing black pants, black sweaters. Nothing fits him right. He's just like, oversized stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's the point where he's just drinking. Very, very slowly, he's wearing lighter colored clothes.
He goes to gray.
Better. He goes to gray, brown.
yeah.
Right. And it's, and so we're seeing how his character is coming out of the depression. Not just by the way he's acting, but we're visually seeing him come out of that darkness, come out of that blackness, and able to experience the colors of life again. I absolutely love those touches.
Dahe's color is yellow. And she's wearing yellow from the start because literally she's hope, right? I mean, she's the fan.
She's sunshine. And she's everything. She's
sunshine, right. And I started to notice that it was even things like using yellow lighting in scenes or yellow props, you know, like, and it was always like kind of signaling that it was a positive, something positive was happening in that scene. Yeah, it was just every little detail was so thought out. And the flashback scenes, I just want to call out the special effects because whenever Guido travels the past, it's everything's in black and white except for him and Dahe who are in color. It's very difficult to do that, especially in the wedding scene. She has a veil and her veil is blowing in the wind. It's really hard to do that. You know, some poor soul was sitting on a computer, you know, fixing all of the weird whatever artifacts on that. So but just like that attention to detail. And like, and so like, again, there's always clues being fed to you. The first sequence where we see Guiju trying to rescue his Hyung, the fireball coming out of the building is in color. But most people don't notice it right away. I went back and rewatched and went, oh, it's in color. That's because Dahe is up there. Oh my God. You know, like you're being signaled. This is like in the second episode, something like that. And you don't know, of course, you don't know the significance until much, much later in the story. But that's just like, again, I'm just imagining the storyboards and like how they just plotted every little detail out to make sure it all matched up.
Another small thing, a smaller plot thing that I kind of enjoyed is that there's so much in K-dramas where you have fated couples that were literally friends as children and then they are fated mates, right? And they have to be together. And instead, this shows there was a character, Guiju, who was so devastated by the death of his wife that he, you know, became an alcoholic, went into this depression, all of this, okay? And it was like second chance love, right? Mm-hmm, because then when you find out it wasn't so simple, the relationship with his first wife, it was not all rainbows and unicorns. They had a complicated relationship. And that I just love the message that you could have, you know, that wasn't his true love, that, you know, that he could never live again. This showed when Dahe came into his life, yes, you can live again. Your life can be color again. You can be happy again. And I loved that message as well, because it's not one we always get in K-dramas. No. Let's just put it that way. Right.
No. So no, I mean, I think in general, it was, you know, a celebration of imperfect love and imperfect love of all kinds, like not just, you know, the romantic love, but the love between the family members and the love between the father and the daughter. And I think that it's interesting because I found so many people being very judgmental of the characters in the story, but the lens of the drama is very humanistic and very empathetic towards everyone. You know,
right.
You get to the sense of the compassion of the storyteller for all of the characters in the story, even when they're doing things that are objectively bad, you know, but still that whole idea of people have a capacity for love and kindness.
I mean, like,
ones you don't think.
Right. Even Dahe's adopted mother, right? Mm-hmm. Like she was supposed to be this big badass loan shark. And she was the one that set Dahe on this path of cons. You're going to work for me. You know, you're going to sign over this insurance money to me. And, you're going to have to pay it back. But all of this stuff, right? And yet we see, okay, she rescued this girl who had no one at the funeral. And she raised her as her daughter. And it's just all that, like the redemption even of her, of yes, it's complicated. They have a complicated relationship, but the reconciliation of adopted daughter to adopted mother, I love that too, right? Like, yes, we are family. Like, because again, like adoption in Korea, complicated thing, right?
Not often, absolutely. Right? Yeah. There were so many taboos that were being broken in the story, I think, you know, compared to what we usually see.
Right.
For sure. Yeah. And I love just the end when Guiju is talking to Dahe right at the end when he's going to send her out the window to the firefighters. And he says, things look bleak right now, but people are coming for you in the very near future, and you're going to find, they're going to look out for you, and don't give up. And, you know, and this is not the end. This is the beginning. I lost it. Anyway, if you made it this far and you haven't seen it, you should. And if you did see it and you loved it, please promote it. I get evangelical about dramas like this because I think it's so easy for them to get lost in the shuffle unfairly. You know,
I want to give a shout out to the name of the screenwriter, Ju Hwa Mi, because kudos to you. This is definitely not one of those dramas that they were writing on the fly. This was one that was carefully plotted out. And I'm here to tell you that these two women here on this podcast appreciate your work very much.
Yes.
Because we can really, exactly. We can really tell when someone has taken the care to carefully plot out a drama, make sure that it all makes sense when you have set up supernatural rules, and also have a meaningful message to say about so many different things. Our kudos go out to you and the director, because this was really an exceptional drama. And when Elisa said, you know, she's like, maybe we should do a podcast. I'm like, yes, we should do a podcast about this one. Because it's, again, it's like one of those hidden gems. You know, I think people are still discovering it because Netflix, you know, is accessible to more people, and it's being suggested to people who watched other K-dramas. But like I said, if you watched that first episode and you're like, I'm not sure, this is one definitely you want to stick with it.
Keep going. Yes, for sure.
All right. Thanks, Elisa, for joining me again for another podcast, Daybok podcast. You can check us out. I mean, I don't know where you're watching it, but we're in all different kinds of formats. We're on YouTube and Podbean and iTunes and all those different places. So definitely check out. We have lots of other episodes. Speaking of Lovely Runner, we had a fun episode about that recently. So, and if you like time travel, we did an episode on a Thai BL called Be My Favorite, that is one more traditional time travel where someone can go back and try to change things in the past to make things better in the future. But it's absolutely adorable, and we highly recommend that as well.
Yes.
All right. Thanks. All right. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.